C1B3.
Number 5A.
Try to summarize again that Christianity aspect, and I will try, if I can explain it always simpler and simpler. And I think the difficulty is because we have to do always with that purity of reality of the spirit and the spiritual. So let me try it again. What is Christianity when we consider it in the platform? That it shows us that we have to, that the whole sense is that infinitely individualized realm of spiritual ideas. Now, what does it mean? From the point of view of the word, you see, we begin to see, because spirit is reality, therefore the universe of spirit is actually spirit, always remaining spirit, and therefore giving, so to say, a sense that spirit is infinitely individualized as spirit. That's the word. Huh? You first define your universe of idea, of reality. That you say, well, yes, we have seen in the word that God is spirit, but is spirit just an amorphous block? Is spirit just something mystical, a whole thing? And it says, no. Spirit is actually spirit, infinitely individualized, a spiritual thing. That's Christianity. And therefore, we begin to see from the point of view of divine science and of absolute Christian science, therefore says, oh God, that's therefore that spirit always creates everything spiritual in infinite individualities. Therefore, spirit goes on and on and on, creating constantly spiritual individualities. But when we come to Christianity as a Christ, then we see, but that Christianity of spiritual ideas and spiritual things must evolve constantly, that they have a dynamics within themselves. They are not static. You don't have infinitely spiritualized things as if they were static in the universe, you see. And there they are there. No, there is a creative sense in it, an idea sense in it, which says, and they evolve constantly, infinitely new ideas of eternity. So there you get that from the divine science point of view, you have that evolution of the universe of ideas, and from the standpoint of absolute Christian science, constantly seeing that that universe produces always new ideas in that universe of reality. So they get a real dynamic sense. But then you ask yourself, but what is then actually produced and evolved? What needs to be constantly evolved? And you come to Christianity as Christianity and say, oh, actually, I have only one awareness of that whole universe, namely the divine ego. That divine ego really is that ego that is composed of the infinite individuality, as she says, from the infinitesimal to the infinite. That contains all individuality. Therefore, from the point of view of absolute Christian science, you see this marvel that men reflect all individualities. That every time that man is put into another situation and evolves in reality, that every time he has to express another individuality. And therefore, he is able to express infinite individuality. Every idea is always the idea of the infinite. So our individuality is not an individuality number one, a single individuality. Our individuality is that we can express infinite individualities. That's our individuality, to be able to express all individualities, and not just one. Actually, then you come to the point of Christianity as science, where you say, now, but all these individualities, they are not isolated. The whole and the part is not isolated, and the individualities and the individualities are not isolated. They all form one big universe. And so you come again to the oneness of it, where you begin to see from the point of view of divine science that we should never think of God that can be divided up in infinite individualities. God is indivisible, and therefore she shows here that the infinite is indivisible, meaning you touch an idea and you touch the whole. The part is no part. What we call a part is never a part. It's only an accentuation of the whole, a reflection of the whole, just as every dewdrop reflects the whole sun and not just the tiny little part of the sun. And so we see the indivisibility of the infinite, the indivisibility. You can't divide them up. But naturally, from the standpoint of absolute Christian Science, you have a relationship of creator and creation, and therefore there we must see that they are inseparable, not indivisible. There they are inseparable, that God and man are inseparable, that they are coexisting, you see, because they are different in quantity, not in quality, but in quantity. She says here in that last point, 24, God and man are inseparable. They are not the same. See, that's the difficulty, because they are not the same. We are thinking of them as two different. The moment you have two different, not the same, wrongly, we think about two, and therefore about separation. Here one, here the other. And she has to correct that, because the moment we have, see, the moment we reason in a realm of spirit, our ordinary logic fails. Our ordinary logic fails, because in the realm of spirit, you can never have two opposite things. You can never have duality. Therefore, the old classical logic fails, and we need a new logic where two things can be different and yet inseparable. And that is only possible when things are spiritual, because in the spiritual, everything reflects the other one. And you get here naturally into that whole synonymy principle, that everything reflects everything else. So she says, they are not the same, but they are inseparable. Humanly, you cannot think that out. That's paradoxical. If you have two things that are not the same, you have two things, finished. You have a duality. And you must make out of that apparent duality a oneness. And you can see it, because in spirit everything blends with everything else. There is no limitation in the spiritual. And so our ordinary logic fails, and we need what she calls divine logic. But in the order of divine science, they coexist and are eternal. God is the parent mind. Here you get it. Here you get the parent mind, where you say it's a parent is always implying two, but it's one mind. Parent implies the parents and children as two different things, principle and idea, creator and creation, but they are not separated. They're not separated. You can't separate them. And you begin to see that under the parent mind, she brings in that the idea is within the parent, and so is always one. A great sense of that parent mind. You have to think it out. I have been thinking about these things now for 40 years. It was around about 1942 or so that I began to see the layout of the platform with one small mistake in it, in the big layout, I saw it and was thinking about it. And it takes spiritual culture in order to have spirit, which can never be separate from anything else, and yet to have differentiation. See, that's the culture. That's something that cannot be split up into parts, still must be seen as infinitely individualized, as being distinct from each other, and yet not to be separate. This is a new culture. But as you begin to think about it, and perhaps with these notes and with these epitomes, I think it should be possible that you begin to get that new sense of Christianity, which has nothing to do with the material universe, nor with saving the material universe, nothing to do with mortals and people and so on, and saving people and healing people, nothing at all. If we go out from spirit, we cannot see anything else but the spiritual. And that would be a terrific basis from which to work, from which to go out. And so we come to the last four points, the fourth side of the holy city, to science, which we have epitomized as scientific being. What constitutes scientific being? Yes, all right. Scientific being. Up to this point, the platform hasn't said anything about that we should have an understanding of the platform or of what she has presented. Whereas now on the fourth side, we get science, and actually when we get science, we get scientific understanding of what is, scientific understanding of what being is. She introduces it from the point of view of the world. And we have here, with the mind of God, perfection is seen. We start out with seeing perfection, which is another term for comprehending or understanding being. It is here suddenly the question, how can we understand what has been presented over the last 24 points? And the 25th point here I have summarized like this. The scientific unity of man with his principle constitutes man's perfection. It first goes out from the necessity of having a unity with God. That's the first step, so to say, in order that our consciousness is constructed and structured the same way as being is constructed. And the moment we turn to this new side, you see at once that a completely different subject enters in. She says here that God is individual and personal, but not in an anthropomorphic sense, but in a scientific sense. So, for the first time now, she introduces that God must be understood or must be seen or comprehended in a scientific sense, not as an anthropomorphic sense. But therefore, the God concept, and you see it's the word, science as the word, is something to be seen. But how? She says that man reflecting God cannot lose his individuality. Only blind mortals can lose sight of it. It's all about losing sight of it and gaining sight of it. Blind mortals do lose sight of the whole platform. Therefore, as we approach the platform as mortals, it never makes sense. Never makes sense. It must apparently be seen and approached quite differently, with quite a different mentality, never as a mortal, never as blind mortal. What then is the alternative? So she gives the alternative and says, man must harmonize with his principal love. The first time seeing that whole platform that she, for the first time she says what man should do. Up to this point she only gave a great deduction from God, the Word, to the Christ, to Christianity, without any demand on man what he should do. But when it comes to science, where man should have now the same structure in his consciousness as the structure of being is, that there is a congruity of the structure of being with the structure of understanding, she now puts forward the necessity of the approach, the word is the approach to God, that the approach is that we begin to harmonize with the divine principle of. As if she would say, now harmonize with the first 24 points. Man must be in accord with his Father. Can you see? It's the same thing, only put into different words. To be in accord with. Man must be in conformity with the Christ. Again, the same thing. This conformity, this agreement, this being, so to say, in congruity with the divine prince. So that it is a demand of man that he aligns, so to say, his way of thinking to that which principle is knowing itself. So that she says, therefore, man is in a degree as perfect as the mind that forms him. And you see, if therefore he has the mind that is God, then he is perfect. So how can we be in accord and in harmony with the prince? By having that mind which is God. And in the measure as we have that mind which is God, we are perfect. So you get a great sense how to go the way. In order to be that being which she has presented in the 24 point. How to be that being? And gives the method. So you can say here, really, the Christian science as the word gives us the method of how to be in accord with God. From the standpoint of absolute Christian science, the next point gives us another indication in the same line. I have epitomized it like this. Purity of heart leads to perfection. So, you see, it leads to. It's more a relative sense. Not, it's heaven bestowing. It's no more heaven bestowed. So, what is heaven bestowing? If you have purity of heart, the pure in heart can see God. And so, She says, in proportion. Can you say in proportion? That has no more anything to do with divine science. In divine science, you have no in proportion that you do this, you get that. Huh? In divine science, it is heaven bestowed and you have everything. But heaven bestowing is that in the proportion to his purity, man is perfect. And that perfection is the order of celestial being. And this order demonstrates life's spiritual ideal. A beautiful sense of how to be the being. At the point of the foresight, you know, we have said it is scientific being. That foresight is scientific being. From the point of the word, we would say, how can I be being? What is necessary that I'm being being? Huh? From the divine science standpoint, it says, the mind that is God makes you to be that being. And from the standpoint of absolute Christian science says, in proportion to your purity of heart, in that proportion you will be that being. So we have the way, namely to get into accord with, to have a pure heart. I mean, blessed are the poor in heart, and they shall see God. Well, what is that pure heart? You see, that has nothing to do with the moral sense. With the moral sense, we can never see God. It has nothing to do with the moral sense. But the pure heart is really what we have been doing over the last few hours. Can we reason from the pure spirit and stay with the purity of spirit and deduce from the word of spirit to the Christ, to the spirit of the Christ, to the spirituality of the universe, where there is only one universe that constitutes only of pure spiritual ideas, that's pure in heart. If we can keep that pedal note constantly, then we are pure in heart, and in that proportion as we keep it, she says, in that proportion you are perfect. Then she goes further to science as Christ. Again, we would have to see that Christ that science must have an expression. Always when we come to Christianity, always think that it has an expressing power, a manifesting power, and so therefore a dynamic power. My epitome reads like this, science as Christ, an understanding of the true idea of man. See, an understanding of the true idea of man brings God's man to light. This is the Christ now. Huh? It brings God's man to light. We have now the dynamics, the waking up, the out of this Adam sleep. How does she show that from the standpoint of divine science? In 27, I made the following epitome. Eternal things, which she also calls verities, eternal truths, are God's thought and are real, whereas temporal things are the thoughts of mortals and are unreal. Can you see the relationship of expression? That she says, if you take God's thoughts and see that they have an expression, you have eternal verities. To see that there is a Christ which brings forth eternal verities. Whereas if we don't have that Christ, what we are experiencing are temporal things. So that our human understanding, our human reasoning, our human conception, they too seem to have a dynamic. They too seem to have the ability to manifest themselves. But what they manifest are actually temporal things. So in the same way as we see, well, our mortal mind, our human conception, our human reasoning, our human mind brings forth all kinds of discord. In the same way we can see here that she says, but if you go out not from the human mind, but from that divine mind which you have learned to be the mind of God and your mind in that section of science as the word, then that has a Christ. It brings forth eternal things. So we can know that understanding we have of the one mind has a Christ within itself. Not we must make the Christ work, but now understanding has a Christ. You see, not God has a Christ. Here, understanding of science has a Christ and brings forth eternal things. Yes, that's why she says here, the true idea of man is the reflection of the invisible God and is incomprehensible to the limited sense. So the incomprehensible sense of man, not knowing God, brings naturally forth the false sense of man, the material man and the universe, namely the poor counterfeit of spiritual man and the invisible universe. I mean, if we really draw our conclusions here properly, we can say that if we are not reasoning along the platform, what we have been doing, if we are not reasoning the way she has shown in the first eight, the second eight, and the third eight, we can be quite sure that we have a wrong concept of man and that we have a wrong concept of ourselves and that things must go wrong. They must go wrong because we have not understood the Word, the Christ, and Christianity. Therefore, we should not be surprised that things have to go wrong.